Hi, this is ETF.com's Exchange Traded Fridays podcast, a weekly podcast covering developments in the ETF industry. My name is Sumeet Roy, and I'm senior ETF analyst for ETF.com. This week, I'm talking with Raymond Bridges, managing director and portfolio manager at Bridges Capital, a registered investment advisor. Raymond, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Raymond, I know it's been a big week for you. Last week, the Bridges Capital Tactical ETF, ticker symbol BDGS, debuted on the NASDAQ. This is a really interesting, actively managed ETF. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, certainly. So the ETF wrapper space is really what's perfect for an active strategy. And I know you're familiar with ETFs, but the fact that if you're active and you're able to effectively not pass out those short-term capital gains to your investors, the ETF gives you that strategy. And that's really the reason why I moved my clients into this ETF in order to give them that opportunity for the tax efficiency that ETFs provide when we're doing this type of strategy. So basically, the process seeks capital appreciation, but it has a preference on capital preservation. You know, over the past 20 plus years working in financial services, I found that most clients, you know, having worked hard to save their investment capital, they have a mindset that preservation is usually more important than chasing and trying to capture 100% of every single rally in the equity markets. But they want to have participation, obviously, in the growth of the equity markets. So that's why this strategy fits a large sum of clients. It has, you know, the cost obviously is a lower rate with the investment advisory fees, you know, being about 1% in the industry standard, an expense ratio of 0.78 that's actually tax deductible versus a non-tax deductible investment advisory fee also makes it cost efficient for clients. It also, the efficiency, like I said, makes it much more effective for clients. So if you want to know a little bit about the approach or the kind of the process or methodology that we use, we sit back and we take a macro fundamental approach to the market to craft a macro thesis. The thesis really changes less than annual. This is kind of it crafts a bias on whether we're going to be more heavily invested in cash for or cash equivalents. Like currently I'm investing short-term T-bills, 1 to 3 months with my cash portion for longer periods of time. And then, or are we going to be investing in the broad market exposure through SPY or QQQ or IWM for longer periods of time if the macro thesis is bullish? Currently, macro thesis has been bearish for a little over a year, but that doesn't mean we sit in cash for the whole time. Based on a technical breadth analysis and volatility analysis that we use, somewhat proprietary, but we look to move the cash portion into broad market exposure to participate in some of the bear market rallies that we had last year and capture those returns. And then we move back as when that macro thesis is bearish, continues to remain bearish, move it back to cash and just kind of sit it out.
So super interesting strategy, Raymond. I want to go a little bit deeper into the fund. But before we do that, you mentioned that you're moving your clients into this ETF. So for people who aren't familiar with you, could you share a little bit about your background?
Yeah, well, my background has been in financial services since early 20s, economics, undergraduate, master's in accounting. I'm a certified public accountant, but I have been running a independent investment advisory firm after I left Wells Fargo around 2015 timeframe. So through that, through the COVID exposure, through the 2021 bear market rally, I did really well for my clients. This strategy was able to protect when clients were, you know, the overall market, say in COVID, was down about 40%, 30%. My clients with an active strategy, you know, I protected them. You know, everybody had SMAs and different investment allocations. They weren't doing exactly the fund, but peak to trough was around 8%, you know, when the market was down about 40. And then that year was a phenomenal year for us because when the monetary policy changed, when Powell stepped up and basically said he was going to support the market during the COVID regime, came in and created special purpose vehicles and really supported the equity markets. We were able to get reallocated and participate in that growth with this strategy. Similar scenario last year when monetary policy started to change early in the 2022 timeframe, the macro thesis changed to bearish, and we're able to hold cash for long periods of time and really protect over those significant washouts that occurred last year. But we did participate in multiple of those bear market rallies to really help our clients out last year. The downside of doing that, whether you're doing it on your own or you're doing it with an RIA that really takes your best interest in heart and is active, is taxes. You have to pay. It's not tax efficient when you're pulling from your account and paying taxes. That's why an ETF structure, it's one of the most efficient vehicles out there that you can do this active strategy with. And I'm on the mindset that the ETF structure is sort of it's we're on a tsunami that's going to sweep this the industry in general, because I believe that it's the right thing for clients.
That's super interesting. I do wonder if other advisors are going to follow in your footsteps and kind of launch these ETFs. As I understand it, you used a white label issuer as your platform, Alpha Architects. Why did you go that route, and what was the process like?
Yeah, so the Alpha Architect, I have nothing but praise for them. Wes is the CEO, and the whole team is right in line. I interviewed a few different ones. The company culture, the process, everything aligned with what I want to do. I've always been client-centric, want to make sure everything goes right for the client. It's the right thing to do with the cost, and then all of the back office support. So the white label, just to give you a little bit, or your listeners a little bit about how it works, is an ETF is obviously it's owned by the shareholders. There's a fiduciary board, a trust that's in charge, that's independent, and then there's the advisor and the sub-advisor. So that's sort of the white label service. So the Alpha Architect has that structure for you, has the relationships with the market makers, has relationships with compliance and legal and different items to really get it up and running. And then you have that fiduciary board that's independent, established, that's always looking out for the investors. And that's really the way the ETF structure works.
That's awesome. And do you have plans to launch any other strategies within the ETF wrapper in the future?
Right now, this strategy is long only. We move into T-bills when we hold cash and long only, and that gives it the broadest range. I'm on the mindset that a cash position and an equity allocation is sort of a lower risk short position, right? So when you're holding cash in an equity allocation, you are kind of bearish, right? But you're not going to be hurting when the market continues to rally, especially with your 20% allocation in long-term, high growth companies. You're still able to participate in that. So that's the lower risk, broadest spectrum way to approach the strategy that I have. However, in the future, there might be an opportunity to do a long short with the same process in order to increase the risk will increase, but it could also increase the potential gains on that type of strategy.
Gotcha. And then I want to dive a little bit deeper into the ETF. You talk about the 20% allocation to high conviction growth type companies. How do you choose these? And I'm assuming they're not just FANG stocks, right?
I wish your assumption was more correct, but it does lead. So the first filter to look at, and the reason we do this is because what's really driving the market is the large mega caps. Whether it's in a bull market, bear market, any of these rallies, what's driving 40% of the market capitalization, SPY or the QQQ, is the top 10% stocks. So we look at those, but I do filter them out. Certain companies, and I don't know if you see Netflix today. I'm not holding it, even though it's in the top 10% and it's running like crazy. But I do have a process where we filter some of those out. It's based on management, it's based on market saturation, a little bit about competition that's coming into the marketplace, and see if they can maintain their dominance in their segment. The other companies that we hold are the mega caps. Pepsi's in there, even though that's not really a FAANG one, but that is something that is dominant in its industry. Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Nvidia, and Meta, and ExxonMobil. Those are the other holdings right now that are just long-term holdings based on their just market dominance in their segment, as well as the market cap. And they're all just cash machines. If you look at their earnings per share, I mean, ExxonMobil is like 14, almost $15 earnings per share. Apple is like $6 earnings per share. These are just companies that make money hand over fist, and they basically own their segment in the marketplace.
Fair enough. And those stocks have been doing tremendously this year, so definitely paying off for the strategy. How about the other 80% of the portfolio? You mentioned shifting between cash and exposure to the broad US stock market. Right now, I think you mentioned you're a little on the bearish side. So how high would the cash allocation be today?
Today it's at 85%. So, and it's been that way since April. We in the process. The reason is we had a nice little rally up through December, pulled back a little bit, had another little rally, and I was able to participate in those rallies. This consolidation period that's been going on since April, this trading range, the breadth has just not been participating. The volatility of the individual components, the majority of the components is very weak. The volatility is high, so it just doesn't lend itself to being able to expand this rally. The past 2 days we had a decent day in the queues, right? They've kind of broken out. SPY still, it's within that range, even though we've been strong. IWM is below, and the Dow is below the April highs, where we exited and started holding cash. So this range is just a consolidation period. I'd need to see breadth participating in order, volatility of the components as well as the breadth participating in this type of rally in order to give conviction that it's going to have legs. My bias remains macro bearish based on fundamentals. And that's what also gives that conviction to hold cash for these extended periods of time, because for sustained prices, higher and higher sustained prices, you do need macro fundamentals to hold on.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what do you think about the Fed and this talk about recession? Do you think the Fed is finally done? And do you think the US economy is going to avoid a recession or fall into one later this year?
Well, there's an opinion, and I try not to invest on like assumptions. I try to manage around the risk and around what's occurring. However, with the Fed, I think just a few days ago, it was the chances of another hike was on the futures market was about 2.8%. Today on the 18th of May, it spiked. It's up around 33% chance that there could still be another hike coming at the next Fed meeting. The Fed doesn't have the best track record of raising rates and avoiding a recession, right? So the chances of a recession occurring in a soft landing occurring, I'm not really in that camp. I think that we still are going to have somewhat of a washout in a capitulation phase. Historically, you hear about the yield curve often. The yield curve is very strong and a predictor, as well as somewhat of a cause of tightening conditions. And when it gets inverted, and then when it starts to uninvert, is when the recession typically has occurred. If you look back into the 80s when these things have been tracked, so the 2 10-year inversion bottomed around March 8th at negative 107, and the 3 month 10-year bottomed at like negative 1.9 May 4th of an inversion, and they both have come up from that from those points fairly significantly. I think the 2 year 10 year is around negative 0.5 in that range. So about half of the inversion has been reversed since March. Historically, the recession follows the uninversion time period. Past performance isn't always indicative, right? But you do want to use that as a guide to see what might occur in the future.
Well, Raymond, I think that's a great place to leave it. This has been a very fascinating discussion and a super interesting ETF. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yes, Amit, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can find this and all other Exchange Traded Fridays episodes on ETF.com or on any major podcast platform. See you next week.